trying to prepare something for change a little bit of the venue to discuss from what I've learned over the years some of the did the Rav give a little shiur on
Sukkos?
Not this year. Okay, so we're hopefully overlap.
Fine.
Say anything different, but I just wanted to focus on two or three halachas relevant to Sukkah itself, and one or two relevant to Lulav, and it's time to end off with maybe one or two hashkafic themes for each of the main mitzvahs of the Chag. Concerning Sukkah, so it's fairly well known that the mitzvah of Sukkah, Vishiva Sukkah, really splits into two. There's, in general, when we speak about mitzvahs, so we could maybe divide into four categories, but there are basically three categories of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that are obligatory, what we call mitzvah chiyuvis, which are most mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs which are optional, meaning that when one performs a certain act, one is in fulfillment of a divine command, which is not necessarily obligatory. For example, let's say someone already has given the minimum amount of tzedakah, whatever the minimum amount is, whether it's 10%, 20%, or less. That's a whole discussion about whether the ma'aser is really a requirement, or it's a minig, or it's a din d'oraisa, din d'rabbanan. Let's say one already has met his minimum obligation, they give more. So as long as it's not an enormous sum, which Chazal advised us against, command us against, because someone shouldn't give more than 20% if one at least is of middle income, because at least by the natural course of things one might impoverish oneself, but to give more tzedakah, then the minimum amount is certainly allowed, and it's a mitzvah. So that's what we call a mitzvah kiyumis, an activity which, when done, fulfills a divine directive, even if it's not absolutely obligatory. The Vilna Gaon was of the opinion, for example, that when you eat matzah past the first night of Pesach, so that's a mitzvah kiyumis. In other words, it's not just a neutral activity, the way others seem to indicate. That the other days of Pesach, you want to have non-chametz, non-matzah, just fish and meat, the potatoes, whatever, nishgebrocht. So there's no... There's certainly no objection to that. The question is there anything to be gained by eating matzah other than filling yourself? So the Gra said yes. He was in Daik from the Psukim, because there's a contradiction in Psukim. One says you eat matzah 7 days, one says you eat matzah 6 days. So Chazal derived from here that just like one of those 7 days, it's not obligatory, so to all the days not obligatory. So how do you know that you have to eat matzah on the night of Pesach, the night of the Seder? The Erev Tochel Matzahs. Today in the Vilna Gaon says, wait a second, but it does say Shivat Yom Tov Matzis, Ein Mikriyot and Dev Shoot, so what does that mean? So he writes, and it's recorded many Sfarim, Mishnah Berurah records it, I believe, that from here you see that there is a concept, Min HaTorah, of eating matzah, the more you eat, the better. And then Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and many others in the Daik, and the Rambam, that let's say within the night of the Seder itself, you're supposed to eat a kazayas, but the language of the Rambam is Ochel Kazayas Yotzah. If you ate a kazayas, you yotze. Sounds like that the more you eat, the better. That's why my Rebbe, Rabbi Schechter, pointed out, I was never in his house in the night of the Seder, but I think someone who was there indicated that he eats a lot of matzah. But he said, you shouldn't get the impression that I'm very machmer on the shiurim. And then he pointed out in shiur, I think this is the shiur of a kazayas and matzah. So they quote from the Chazanish. They said, even that's a little bit of a chumrah. Lamaita depends on how thick or thin it is. There's no real absolute shiur, but... but it's somewhere around the size of this. That's pretty much the farm station, like 7 by 4 inches. It says, but I think the way he put it is, I like matzah. But I think what that meant halachically was that I like to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah properly. In other words, not just to be minimalist. And you have, let's say, on Chanukah, you have three tiers of kiyum. You have regular nerish ubeso, one candle, and then mahadrin. There's no avera violated by not being mahadrin min mahadrin. So that's what we call them. If you fulfill it, it's not just a mundane, it's not just a secular activity. It's a mitzvah performance, but there's no diff commandment. So there's a obligatory mitzvah, the optional mitzvah, and the mitzvah in the middle. How could it be in the middle? Either it's optional or it's obligatory. So there are mitzvot that are obligatory when you are in a certain condition. So if I have a house, I have to put on a mezuzah. I don't have a house, or if I'm in a hotel, I'm not chayiv in the mitzvah mezuzah. It's not that the mitzvah is not obligatory, it's just I haven't fulfilled the circumstances which are going to make it obligatory. That's, for example, a massive source of discussion, especially when trying to convince younger boys to wear tzitzis. Right, Rabbi, it's true, if I don't wear a four-cornered garment, I'm not violating the mitzvah of tzitzis. So, if the, I don't know if that's allowed, but if the Rav wants to just put it on the rug, he'll just say, no, it's not true, but at least to some extent it is true, because that's why the Gemara explains that there's an obligation to put tzitzis on your four-cornered garment that's in the drawer. It's only when you're wearing it. So, and if you're not wearing it, so you're not formally in violation of the mitzvah of tzitzis. But that's in many of the poskim, they quote the Gemara Menachos that indicates that although that's technically true by the letter of the law, but whenever you have an opportunity to put yourself in a degree of obligation easily, so then the Menashemayim, they don't look too kindly at you if you don't. So it's perhaps based on that Gemara, and perhaps just based on Chavivus and Mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael generally have quote unquote volunteered to go out and buy a beged of dalit kanfus to wear it. And then Moshe Feinstein's Hatzal and others take up the issue that maybe nowadays it's binding because of Minig Yisrael. Since Minig Yisrael was not always necessarily to go seek out a mother bird and send it away to take the eggs, which many try to do at least once a life, but Minig Yisrael, what I'm saying is Minig Yisrael wasn't necessarily to put themselves in the situation of Chiyah for every mitzvah, but for tzitzis they always did. So if one's an Ashkenazi or a Sephardi or a Taimani or any other kind of Jew, so you belong to a community that always has gone out and gotten the four-cornered garments. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in one of his tshuvas that it's, nowadays at least, it's obligatory to wear tzitzis through a back door. So that's the middle category. So I just wanted to discuss briefly, so what's the story with sukkah? What kind of mitzvah is that? Because on the one hand, you have to eat in sukkah. On the other hand, you don't have to eat in sukkah. When are you gonna? Everybody knows that. Let's say I'm having a snack. So I don't have to eat in sukkah. Wait a second, but sukkah station, shivas yamim. So although there is considerable discussion about this, it seems that the standard psak runs as follows: the rest of the days of sukkah, the status of the mitzvah of sukkah is what we call a This middle category. It's obligatory, but only if you fulfill certain conditions. I happen to use the term, just for educational purposes, I call it a mitzvah chiyuvus al hatnai. It's an obligatory commandment that's conditional. Why is that such a wild term? Because the more classic term that the Rishonim use is mitzvah harishus. The Rambam uses that term, but that's a very confusing term. That sounds like an optional mitzvah. The Rambam refers to that category of middle-type mitzvahs where you need certain conditions in order to be obligated. But once you have those conditions, you are obligated. He calls those mitzvahs a rishus, and he has a whole halachic discussion with whatever relevant to that, I think in Hilchos Brachos, about mitzvahs a rishus. But that's a confusing term, as you mentioned, because that sounds like it's optional, which it isn't. So I use a more highfalutin term. Mitzvah chiyuvis al hatanai. So most of the days of Sukkot, again, this is not universally accepted, but this is what the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch would indicate. We know that by Torah law, you have to eat and sleep in the Sukkah. Various leniencies people rely on nowadays, some more creative than others, and one of the most basic ones, especially in a year like this, is that it's not such pleasant weather. So although eating, you're going to put a jacket on, you'll eat in the park, but you're not necessarily going to sleep in the park in 50 degree weather. So, well, maybe you should get a heavy blanket. So that's a whole discussion whether or not certainly it has developed whether correctly or incorrectly that people don't accept for the Mishnah Berurah writes chutz mihamidaktikim b'mitzvos ma'od that they don't sleep in the sukkah, not at night and not naps. But obviously if it's you know, the weather's nice and especially during the day, it's very advisable to at least take your naps in the sukkah.
You should sleep. Yeah, in a
second. Even at night.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I stand corrected. But all right.
Sorry.
Time doesn't permit to go through that now. But I'm not. I'm not neither justifying nor No, not just trying to practice, but just the bottom line is that most people don't. And then the poskim have developed a variety of limudei chus, at least, of various approaches as to why people don't. But so you have to sleep and you have to eat in the sukkah. Now what about davening the sukkah? What about learning the sukkah? What about just hanging out with your friends in the sukkah? A student of mine asked me, do you have to watch television in the sukkah? So I said, I actually once did that when I was younger, but now I don't have a television anymore. So I told him, I said, if the program is mutter the whole year, then it would be advisable to have a sukkah too. You don't have to, but... So that was step one. I guess now it would be, should you take your DVD player into the sukkah? So... The Mishnah in Perek Sheni in the Masechta Sukkah writes, it's called Perek HaYoshen, that basically seems to indicate that what you do on Sukkot is you eat, sleep, and the Rashi on that Perek also indicates that what do you do in the Sukkah? You eat and sleep. Other activities too. So some Mishnah seem to indicate the following, that there are two activities that when you do them, you're obligated in sukkah. If you eat a meal, or if you take even a nap, that's a famous distinction between eating, because the Gemara says, because eating, if it's just a snack, doesn't really satisfy you, unless it's a Snickers bar, right? But sleeping, so even a nap sometimes does the trick, right? You sleep sometimes for 5 minutes, a cat nap, and then you're refreshed, you could nap. So that's what the Gemara says, even Shein Asarai requires the sukkah. And so there's a mitzvah chiyuvis al hatnai, meaning if you are eating and sleeping, you don't want to eat, you don't want to sleep, you don't want to sleep, let's say, during the day, so don't be in the sukkah. You don't want to have a main meal, don't be in the sukkah. But all the other activities, just interesting, they point out, the language of the Shulchan Aruch is based on the Mishnah, is mitayel basukkah. So the post can say, what, you take a spazier in the sukkah? How big is the sukkah? Walk? Adarava, Teshuva came to Duru, which is the overarching principle that you don't have, sukkah's not a jail. You're allowed to leave the sukkah when you normally would leave your homes, certainly. So walks take place outside of the sukkah. So a very interesting sefer came out maybe 10 or 15 years ago called Hilchas Chag B'Chag by Rav Moshe Karp. I don't know who he is, but I could see him say it's a very big Talmud Chacham.
He, I think, coordinates the Mishnah
Yonos. Oh, yeah? So it seems to be in
his league.
So he just has a beautiful aura that if you look carefully to the Targum Onkelos, the Targum Onkelos on Sukkah is Mitalalta. So the Aramaic word Litalel, or maybe sometimes we express Litayel, means to be under the roof of. So Mitayel means to hang out. Just means to, whatever, sip a cup of coffee, even if you're not chayiv, in the sukkah. That doesn't mean necessarily take a walk. That doesn't seem to work. But those kinds of activities, the Mitayel, that's not obligatory. So what kind of category is that? So that's the third category, Mitzvah Rishus. What I call Mitzvah Rishus. Optional Mitzvah. In other words, if you're eating or sleeping, you have eating a meal, taking a nap, then you have to be in the sukkah. If you're doing other activities, it's advisable to be in the sukkah. Why not? Why not chav a mitzvah? And the more you're there, the better. That's why they call from the Gdol Yisrael, that when possible, they would learn a lot in the sukkah, they would always speak to friends in the sukkah, because the more you do, the more mitzvah you get. And they point out, well, sukkah is one of the few mitzvahs that encompasses the whole body, and no coincidence that occurs right after Yom Kippur. Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zakeh Es Yisrael. So he gives them a mitzvah where every single life activity could be elevated. Everything you do could be in the sukkah, even if it doesn't have to be in the sukkah. And the exception to the rule is the first night. The first night, the Gemara in sukkah derives from Gzei Reshava, Chamishas from Pesach, that there's an obligation to eat in the sukkah. In other words, I'm not hungry, I don't want to eat. Now, leaving aside, which is a very fascinating discussion in Rishon about Seudas Yamtish. What do you mean you don't want to eat? You have a mitzvah Seudas Yamtish. So shouldn't that push you into the sukkah? So some Mishonim come up with a surprising conclusion. On Yamtish you don't have to have bread. On Shabbos you have to have bread. On Yamtish you don't have to have bread. Some Mishonim write that. We don't paskin like that. So the Mishonim come up with different answers. Whatever, if for whatever reason a person wouldn't be obligated theoretically in Seudas Yamtish, But there's still an obligation to go into that sukkah on the night, first night, chutzlar's first two nights, and have at least the kezayis. Where does the kezayis come from? So the kezayis comes from Pesach. So I just wanted to develop a little bit the following interesting discussion. And the poskim writes, the chachila wants to try to really fulfill the stricter opinion when possible. Usually it will, but and that is the following. What exactly is the nature of shipping over the halacha from Pesach to Sukkot? Should we say that just like on the night of Pesach, there's what we call a mitzvah sachila, the mitzvah to eat? What's called eating in halacha? To eat matzah, that is. What's called, same thing with the carbon Pesach. What's called eating in halacha? So you know, eating is defined as a kezayis. It doesn't necessarily mean an elaborate meal. That's it's a shear of eating. So in order to be yotzei mitzvah, kezayis. In order to violate an avera, formally speaking, that you should get malchus, right? You have to eat a kezayis of a cheeseburger, or a kezayis of cheeseburger might be two problems, but a kezayis of any prohibited food, foodstuff, as they say, in order to get malchus. The Gemara points out in the end of Masechta Yoma that even a mashu is still awesome in HaTorah, but you don't get malchus for it. So the plateau of Isser is when you have eaten. When did you eat? You ate that a kezayis, both for mitzvah purposes and for avera purposes. Some even suggest that the shear of revius for liquids is ultimately a kezayis in disguise. Because the Gemara has a certain halacha that when you, if you theoretically would congeal a revius, so it would shrink into a kezayis. So it might be that all the shear are related. So that would be the simple approach, and that is the majority opinion of the Rishonim, and that's what's accepted in Shulchan Aruch. What do we ship over from matzah? There's a chiyav achila, and there's a chiyav achila, the night of Sukkot too. But the Ran and other Rishonim, they say, wait a second, Sukkot is a different kind of mitzvah. Sukkot is not a mitzvah to eat. Sukkot is not a mitzvah to sleep. Sukkot is a mitzvah to live in the sukkah. Teishvu kein tiduru. But b'chaga shivas yamim teishvu basukos. And what's living? Well, if you wanted to whittle down living in a physical way, you got to eat. You got to sleep. The other activities, at least from the physical perspective, are optional. These things must be done, right? So the Torah says, live in the sukkah. Well, what's living? Minimally, eating and sleeping. So based on this, to be shown in my way, wait a second. When you sit down to the table and have a meal, you don't have a kezayis, yotze. I was yotze eating, right? Now I'm not eating anymore. You have a sizable amount that to some extent can fill you up. So the way the Gemara assesses, in general, what's considered a kind of a kvius, or something where you're establishing a meal, more than a kibetza, which is more than double that size. A kezayis is the 1 ounce. So let's say it's like a half a slice of rye bread, or maybe a whole slice of regular, I don't eat that usually. Well, what's it called?
White bread.
White bread. And so a kibetza would be like more than a whole slice of rye bread, or more than two slices of white bread. So the Ran reasons that just like the Gemara says, that in general to be considered a kvius, not just a snack, it has to be more than a kibetza. So on the night of the first night and the second night of Chutzlars too, that's what the mitzvah is. So the Torah is saying that whereas the other days of sukkahs, you don't want to live in the sukkah because you're not living, you don't want to eat, you don't want to sleep, so don't. But the first night you must live in the sukkah. Well, how do you live in the sukkah? By eating a meal? Well, a meal is more than a kibetza, not just a kezayis. So although in Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch writes, kezayis is certainly sufficient, but the Mishnah Berurah recommends you have more than a kibetza. So again, you don't have to bend over backwards, it's just not like matzah, pushing it down, but you know, here, like a nice slice of challah usually is more than a kibetza, but the poskim, based on the Mishnah Berurah, point out that it would be advisable to do so.
There
were
those that eat matzah
in
the sukkah on the first night to make that connection.
Yeah, so that's a little too much. That no one does. I never heard of it, but I did want to mention the following. That there is a prima godin. It's one of the super commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, it's a commentary on the commentaries. It's Magen Avraham and the Taz. He has a running commentary on all of them. So the Prima Gadim Rambam says, wait a second, you see, we're learning it out from Pesach. So if you would go with the approach of the Ran, that it's a mitzvah to live in the sukkah, so okay, that's simple. You just eat. Just eat more than a kibetza of bread, whatever kind of bread you want, with honey, without honey, so on and so forth. But the Rambam Gaon says, but we pass in the Shulchan Aruch that it's a mitzvah sachila, like it's a more formal halacha of eating, which would derive from the mitzvah matzah. So how far do you take that? So Mr. Nathan says, quotes those who eat matzah. So that's for sure not. If someone does that for Kavanah's mitzvah, one would probably even violate Baal Tosif. Right? If you would eat matzah today for the purpose of being yotzei the mitzvah matzah, right? That's Baal Tosif. If you want to have matzah instead of challah, okay, so we could have that on Sukkot too, but I don't think there's really anything to be gained by having matzah. But just to finish the sentence, so the Prima Gadol says, wait a second, but it shouldn't be a very rich kind of bread? Because after, like, it shouldn't be egg challah. It should be water challah. Because, after all, lechem oni, right? So, says obviously you can't take it to the extreme that it should be matzah, because there's no mitzvah to be matzah, but whatever we can extract from matzah, we should.
How about lechem al-chilas pas?
Yeah, but that for sure, because that's a general law of eating. I'll mention that in a second. So the post can point out that, with all due respect to the Prima Gadol, it's a very extended kind of chumrah. That's, even if you assume it's a formal mitzvah of achila, but it's a mitzvah to eat bread, whatever kind of bread you want. And you want to put some honey on the bread, fine. And you want to, so some are machmir for that Prima Gadol, that they have water chal on the night of a sukkis. But it's just really just a chumrah. What just mentioned is the fact that just like on the night of the Seder, you're not supposed to just nibble at the matzah, you're supposed to eat it within a certain shear. So you don't have to drive yourself crazy, but as you point out, formally speaking, it's called kazayis bechtechilas pras, which is kazayis within 9 minutes. So too, on the night of Sukkot, that one should eat the first piece of challah in a, shall we say, a relatively quick pace, without stuffing, but you know, it's not to just take a nibble and then have some soup and another nibble and another nibble, because then you're not neither having a kazayis nor having more than a kavetza in that time frame. In general, that's always something to keep in mind, because you can't bench. If you nibble at the challah, one nibble, and then you wait another 15 minutes, another nibble, and by the time you're done, say you've eaten a kazayis, but you can't bench because you didn't have a kazayis within a kadeh express. So if you're eating the bread in a way that you can bench, then you're certainly yotzei the mitzvah of sukkis too, but it's all the more important because of this
mitzvah.
I'm sorry?
Shabbos also. Yeah, also
right. And there's a discussion there. We're going to get involved now. And Shabbos is proper to have at least the kibetza instead of just the kazayas. So these are just some highlights to some of the...
How about Hefsek? Some old Hefsek. On Sukkah, that I've heard of a friend.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have the hefsek, you know, it's a chumrah.
Not to interrupt. Okay. With matzah too, it wouldn't be ma'akev if you were matzah. Okay. So then we have, very fascinating, that within this little mitzvah, well, big mitzvah, which is of Sukkot, you have all three types of mitzvahs. On the first night, you have a mitzvah chiyuvis, obligatory mitzvah, either kazayas or more than a kibetza. The other days, so it depends. If you're having a set meal, so then it's a mitzvah chiyuvis al hatnai. You know, it's, you're eating a meal, and you're chayiv to eat in the sukkah. And then other activities, so there it's a mitzvah kiyumis. If I drink some water in the sukkah, I get a mitzvah. If I read a book in the sukkah, I get a mitzvah. So if I learn in the sukkah, I get two mitzvahs. Learning and the mitzvah sukkah. So that mitzvah encapsulates all three. This is one approach to answering the question that the Magen Avraham raises as to why is it that we don't make a bracha on matzah for 7 days. But we do make a bracha on sukkah for 8 days. So the seven days, I should say. The eighth day we eat without a bracha, Shmini Atzeres. For those who do that, that's a separate discussion. So the simple reason is because in matzah, all the other days, that's an optional mitzvah, even if you're going to go with the grah. But sukkah, the other days, when you're having a meal, that's not an optional mitzvah. That's a mitzvah that you didn't have to place yourself in a situation where you are obligated. But if you do place yourself in a situation, you want to have a meal, then you should be in the sukkah. So that's why you make a bracha. You make a bracha on obligatory mitzvahs.
Why do you make a lecture of a sukkah, you think?
Right. So that's what we follow in Shulchan Aruch, although here too, the Rishonim are not unanimous in this, but we paskin that you only make a bracha on obligatory sittings in the sukkah.
So why don't make a bracha on going to sleep?
So therefore, the cholam moed.
So that's why we're making a bracha the first night, and the cholam moed we're making a bracha when you have a set meal. So what's called a set meal? So in times of the Gemara, everything centered around bread. So if you had more than a kibetza of bread, that would be a set meal. And then the post can discuss, what if it's noodles? So some say, well, it's the exact same shear as bread. And some say, with other things, you need a little more than that. And what if you're having the typical American meal, or just having a piece of chicken and some broccoli, whatever. Assuming you like broccoli. Or peas and carrots. No, or and rice. Right? Rice is not the chamesh yisaminim. So, if you look through the Shulchan Aruch, you might get the impression that me'ikar adin, you're pater, because that's a snack. So many posts can point out nowadays, wait a second, these are not halachos of Moshe Sinai, right? These are just what's called a main meal. So to make a bracha, the posts are pretty unanimous. You're not going to make a bracha for less than, at least less than a little bit more than a kibetza of grain food. But to exempt yourself from the sukkah, very difficult nowadays to exempt yourself from the sukkah just because you're not eating bread.
You could probably
if you have anything else. So
easy math to eat at a smorgasbord or a kiddush inside your sukkah, you probably have at least a kazayas.
Well, but in order to make a bracha, we insist upon more than a kibetza of grain. So what I'm just saying now, I saw this in the Piskei Tshuvas, that's the Sefer over here, and also my Rebbe Willig gave a Shabbos Tshuva Drashan, that was the Chelek Halacha, but this very point, that nowadays things to be a little backwards. We don't eat that much bread, so, you know, just having like two slices of bread wouldn't quite do it for us, and a lot of times we have meals without bread totally. So Lamaisa, I thought that La Halacha, one should certainly be particular. Let's say a nafkamina would be if one's going on a pleasure trip, and many posts can write that pleasure trips do not really exempt you from the sukkah. So one should try, if possible, to suffice with just snack kinds of foods rather than having a set meal without bread. Because a set meal without bread really very well might be chayv in sukkah.
What about, other than grains, but any other shem, I mean, grapes or dates?
Yeah, so maker adin is a part from sukkah, and probably, unless one could make a case you're having a meal, it's very difficult to say.
No, but
The fact you're saying Allah eats in and of itself does not. Yeah, so it could have a lot of grapes outside the sukkah. It's called a chilas haray. What I just wanted to finish off with is the following: that there's a big question. How come you don't make a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah? So I'll just give one answer, which fits according to the way we're presenting it today, and that is you're not 100% sure you'll fall asleep. So if you go with this approach, that you're only chayiv in the sukkah when you do certain kinds of activities, so you might not fall asleep. Eating...
Because you shouldn't say... You shouldn't say...
Yeah, but they make it in, the post can point out that...
You can't follow Rove? There are nights that
that's
you don't fall asleep.
They have all the answers, which I don't remember now. Yeah. But the truth is with Hamapil, I think the Gra writes that Hamapil is on Seder Hayom. Just like the discussion of Mavir Shena Me'enai, so in the morning, some say you could say that he didn't sleep up all night, because it's the regular order of things. So some suggest, even though Lahalacha, if you're not going to sleep, you wouldn't say Hamapil. But you always have that to rely on, that idea that even if you don't fall asleep, it's still not a bracha batala, because you're following the regular way of the world. But in any case, that's one of the reasons given. Because we follow that approach, that we only make a bracha when we're fulfilling an obligatory mitzvah in the sukkah, so the minig is that we demonstrate that, and it's not so well known, we demonstrate that by having the bracha in the most, clearly defined area that demonstrates that the only reason we're making a bracha is because of the fact that we're eating. And how to do that? Right after the Birchas Hanenin. Right, so when you're making Kiddush, it's simple, you say it in the context of Kiddush. But let's say you're having a bread meal without the Kiddush, they're in Chol HaMoed, so then the proper placement for the bracha is after the Amotzi. Amotzi lechem min haaretz, or boring mini mizonos, if it's mizonos, and then you make the bracha of Leishei Vosekam.
It's not a hefsek to eating it.
Right, for sure not, because it's Sorech HaSeuda. That's based on this approach that we have, that we only make brachos when you're doing an obligatory activity. Theoretically with sleep, but there are other reasons why we don't.
But the first time we say it before Amotzi, correct?
Right, because there you have, once you have a Kiddush, so then you say it beforehand. And all of this, though, is different from the Shitas HaRambam, which is very unique in its own way, and that is the Rambam held anytime you go into the sukkah, you make a bracha. So, but we don't follow that Rambam. We follow the approach that you only make a bracha when you're doing an obligatory activity. I just wanted to conclude with one or two brief halachas concerning lulav, which just looking around the shul, again, it could be based on other opinions, but just it's not in accordance with the rulings of the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. The first is that, of course, the minim have to be fresh. Sometimes people pluck down a lot of money on the minim, but then they don't care about the aravos. They don't. Let me rephrase that. They don't take care of the aravos. That means by the time the second, third, fourth day of Yom Tov for Chol Moed is there, the aravos are all dry because they just put them in the plastic bag. So you're not yotzei the mitzvah that way. I mean, some dryness you can get away with, but if it's so dry that it'll crack, you're not yotzei. So you got to be very careful about that. That to preserve the minim. And everybody knows, maybe not everybody knows, two ways to do it. You could either put some water in the bag, although if you use that method, sometimes, usually by the 6th or 7th day, the leaves start falling off.
No, in the fridge, put it in the refrigerator.
Or in the fridge, you wrap it around a damp towel. Kayadua. But it's important to do something. Otherwise, by the time the 3rd, 4th day of Yom Tov comes, maybe even the 2nd day, you can't be out to the mitzvah. The second thing I wanted to point out is the fact that the Mishnayos and Sukkah say that the shear of Hadassim and Aravos is 3 tefachim, which is somewhere between 9 to 12 inches. And the shear of Aluv is 4 tefachim. So usually, well, Hadassim now prepackaged, Aravos they just give you, so you definitely have much more than the shear. But the lulav, you also have more than the shear. But here the Shulchan Aruch writes that, based on the Gemara, that why is it that the shear of a lulav is one tefach more than the shear of Hadassim and Aravos? So the Mishnah says kedei l'naneah bo. So what does it mean kedei l'naneah bo? So there are two days in the Rishonim as to what shaking a lulav means. One day is it means movement. The other day, which we follow based on the Ramad Ashkenazim, means shaking. So based on that machlokas, it would appear that so what is it, what has to be an extra tefach? So if you go with the approach that it means shaking, then it should be an extra tefach all the way to the top, because that's what shakes, the top. But if you go with the approach that it means movement, so then it would follow that it would have to be an extra tefach, what we call on the shidra. The way a lulav is shaped, it has leaves coming out from like a central area, what they call the spine, the shidra. And then at a certain point, the leaves stop coming out. And then just the shidra, the spine, just goes to the, it extends to its own central leaf. At the point that the leaves stop coming out, that's the end of the shidra. So, la halacha, we accept that view, at least here too, according to all the days, we accept that has to be four tefachim. Now, it will be, unless you have a very, very tiny lulav. But I just wanted to mention that I haven't seen many bintum makbanan. I'm not sure why. The Shulchan Aruch writes that because you're supposed to have a tefach of shidra extra than the hadassim and the aravos, so the hadassim and the aravos are supposed to be pulled down to a tefach below that shidra. Now, if you have very tall hadassim, very tall aravos, then you just bind them in the keshkel, as they said, that whatever, this banabi or whatever, is holding up the world by the keshkelach, you know, with the whole lulav mess, holding it up from Egypt, etc. But, so that would mean that either you have to cut a little bit on the bottom of the dasim and the rubbers with care, make sure you don't lose three tefachim, or just pull it further down, right? And then you could even have kind of a funny situation, which is perfectly acceptable in halacha, where here you have your lulav, and the stems of the dasim and the rubbers are extending below the lulav. Now, I don't do that, it looks funny, so I usually cut the dasim a little and the rubbers on the bottom in order to allow that. I see by the recognition that everyone's familiar with this, so I just wanted to, because sometimes I've seen a lot of shuls, people have the aravos nadasim towering above the lulav, sometimes even higher than it.
Really?
Now, it's very hard to say that you're not yotzei that way, even though some have said, maybe not, because it's halach and the shir, but that's important to keep in mind, that to lower it totally beneath that one tefach below the shidra. The final thing I wanted to mention, and this I'll ask those who might be shocked by this, to consult with the Rav on this, but several Achronim noticed that you're not supposed to bind the lulav in the area that is within that extra tefach, because that extra tefach is supposed to be home free for shaking. So what does that mean? So I would have said it means the top portion. But later, post can point out that, wait a second, but we follow that approach that the fourth tefachim is on the spine, which would mean that the first wrap, the first bendel, what they call, should be placed, a tefach, 3 to 4 inches, below the end of the shidra.
Wow.
Right? So this one's a surprise, right? This one you'll check out.
Is he going to have a lot of shaking at the top?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of shaking, which is not... No, it won't open up. It's not going to break as long as, you know, you don't...
You're not going to have... but the rub you have to make noise. The rub blues mama, you have to make noise.
Good. So he'll make more noise.
That's serious shaking.
Okay, but even so, but, you know, what some people do, as Mr. Brewer writes, they shake so much they break the lulav. That... Many years I was medactic on this. I'll give you the sources so you could have some artillery. The Mishnah Berurah right is supposed to be tefach below. He doesn't qualify exactly where. So the Bikur Yaakov, one of the famous poskim on Sukkot, as well as the Shulchan Aruch Rav, is quoted by the later Sfarim. These are 1800s, 1700s, 1800s poskim, classic poskim. Everyone quotes them. So they say they just connect the dots. Where does this tefach come from? The tefach is the extra tefach on the shidra. So that's what I do. And then once I have that bendel in place, I know how low my hadas and rubs have to be. So
how can you see the top of the shidra?
I think I saw a picture of Avad Yosef who seemed to have bendel higher than that. So they have these posters.
Two, not
three. So I don't know, but I do point this out at least as food for thought that's something to look into.
Would you be allowed to cut the aravos and adasim to size?
Yeah, but down below.
Below.
Oh, on yom tov not. Maybe you should be able to because it's not really misakin.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a very good kasha. I don't have rule.
It's already cut off.
It could be a right because you're not really being misaki. You're not making it kosher.
No, you're not
making it kosher.
Well, because
theoretically I could just lower it. Even if I'm akpin this, I'll lower it all the way down, right? You're not making it kosher.
Okay.
Right, that's a good point. I don't know. I don't know. It certainly
you,
should look into that.
Are you saying that a knepple is not good?
No, why?
Because it doesn't shake.
Right, good question.
Oh, yeah. So the truth is some folks can have that issue, that chashash. Certainly, many, many Rishonim hold that Mikra Adin shaking is just movement. So you're certainly okay with that. And even if you go the other approach, theoretically it could shake. But your point is, well, there are those who mention that. That some say if you have a very solid lulav, so some are makbid to at least detach a little bit, at least on the ends, you know, so at least... The two leaves on the end should be some kind of shaking.
I'm always afraid that the top is going to split.
Right.
And if it splits, then it's not
good. Okay, no, but if you detach on the side, you know, like a leaf here on the... I don't mean rip it off. Just if it's a total solid, so if you just put your finger in and, you know, detach a little leaf over here, a leaf over there, so then you get a little shake, even if the middle is very solid. That's what some do.
Not to shake.
Right. Anyway. Rabbi Shach, the quote of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that in Europe many were not particular at all to shake. They just moved. Okay, I just want to conclude the following brief idea. First of all, good Yom Tov to everybody. And probably will not be able to be here next week. So we'll have to leave that somewhat open, but I don't think it's going to happen. And this, the last thing I wanted to mention is that we shake the lulav in two places in the Hallel. One is Hodel Hashem Kitov, and the other is An Hashem Hashina. So just to see the obvious, your next Hodel too, right? But I meant two basic psukim, because the Gemara points out there are two reasons why we do Nanuim. One is to demonstrate Hashem is the master of the world, so it's an idea of Shevach, and the other is to demonstrate to daven to Hashem that we should have a bounty, we should have a lot of rain, a deposit. A lot of rain and a lot of bounty to the world, to Klal Yisrael, to the rest of the world. So it's interesting, that's exactly where we shake it. We shake it, Hodel Hashem Ki Tov Kol Chasdo. We praise Hashem. We show He's the master of all the four corners of the world, up and down. And then we shake again, An Hashem Hashiena. Right? It just hit me once. That's exactly the two reasons the Gemara gives shaking a lulav. Those are exactly the two points we shake it. One in an expression of Tefillah, and the other expression of Hodah.
So how can you
the red button, right?